So the most people begin thinking about, you know, what's that stuff out there? Why is it so important? What's the point? Why do we study this so much? And I have to tell you, when I did my undergrad in horticulture, it was kind of like, oh yeah, I got to take this stupid soils class, let's get through with it. But the longer I've been in this profession, the more I know that the real basics for growing good plants and healthy plants is soil. And so that's why we think it's very important that the master gardeners start out knowing that and understanding it. And also that some of the other things that I teach have to do with it. And I write columns about soil too. And by diagnosing problems with the soil, sometimes we can figure out what's going on with plants, why things aren't growing the way they should. And also different types of soil really affect how other things do. Drainage, compaction, all sorts of different things. So, what's dirt? Well, that's the stuff that gets on your floor, under your fingernails, that the kids drag in, or that in my house the dogs drag into the house. So the question is, what's soil? Anybody want to venture a guess? Yeah?
Does it have nutrients that plants require to grow?
Mm-hmm. Right. So soil is actually, and most of us think of soil as just this little bit, but this whole section is what would be called soil. This is actually called a soil profile. And we look at this as it's a dynamic, meaning a living, you know, ecosystem, consists of abiotic. So in this case, abiotic means we have what's called mineral soil. So it's little teeny tiny bits of rock. And sometimes nutrients, nutrients and things, biotic substances, living things, everything from fungi to bacteria to what are called mycorrhizae to earthworms to bugs to all sorts of things. And it's arranged in what's called a stable aggregate. So one of the important things about soil is it's not just these little pieces, but they clump together. Then it builds from the parent material or the original rock that was there. And it's acted on over thousands of years, millions of years. In Wisconsin, do you know what is the greatest soil builder that we've had in Wisconsin?
The glaciers, right.
So a lot of our soil, and then prairie and other kinds of vegetation later on. In the state of Wisconsin, we actually have over 700 different types of soils. So it's not that, you know, everything is the same all over. And you can even see we have a lot of differences just right here in Kenosha County. So I want to kind of hone in on what is part of that soil. So if we looked at just a cube of soil, the ideal amount of soil, what's in that cube by volume, would be about 45% minerals. And minerals mean that little pieces of rock. Okay, so then about 5% organic matter, so dead and decaying, could be plants, could be animals, could be all sorts of things in there, but organic matter, carbon-based matter. About 25% of that would be air. And about 25% would be water. Because, you know, you think about it, if you have little pieces of rock or soil particles, they don't all hit evenly together. So there's a lot of space in between them. And that's where that air and water is. And that's essential. Plants need, roots need air as much as they need water. So, and how that works. Now, within those mineral particles, we look at three basic sizes. And so sand, and most of us know what a grain of sand looks like, the sand would be the equivalent of a beach ball, okay, if you think of it that way. A particle called silt, and you'll get to actually feel and get to know this a little better, would be about an equivalent size of a marble, and a clay particle would be about the size of a pinpoint, so very tiny. So you get the idea of the differences. Now, all soils are a combination of these different size pieces of mineral, or these particles, and but what we do is, one of the ways we classify soil is based on the percentages of those different size of particles. So that's what comes with the soil triangle, and I'm certainly not going to expect you that we're going to go into great depth. But if you look at over here, the biggest size particles, the sand size particles, if we had all sand, and even a sandy beach wouldn't be all sand, then that would be considered a sandy soil. But as we get more of the tiny clay size particles, we have a different type of soil. So we got sandy clay, or maybe even all clay soil. The ideal soil for a lot of people, for most plants, is considered in this loam category. So it would contain part sand, part silt particles, and some clay particles in there. So the ideal is a nice combination, and then that they clump together correctly. So now we're going to get up and we're going to go next door, and you're going to get an opportunity to do one of our activities that we do with the Master Gardeners, which is to actually feel the different kinds of soil and compare them and get an idea of, you know, a little bit about, you know, what it's like and what you would feel with this. And you may go, okay, this doesn't make sense. But believe it or not, if you do this enough, you can go in your own backyard and you can start to get kind of an idea of, you know, am I feeling a lot of sticky clay? Am I feeling the slippery silt? Am I feeling a lot of sand? You know, some of those kinds of things. So we do use it, not only soil scientists, but horticulturists. So I have a handout for you, or an activity sheet here. If you need a pen or a pencil, I have that here. So if you want to pick this up and then pick up the pen or pencil, and we're going to go next door. And you are going to get dirty.
Oh, honestly, yes, I've ever been. That's my day. It's so much better now. So
switch out.
Bring in the recorder so I can keep recording.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, is it clay or is it compacted? Because a lot of times, compacted soil, people think because it's hard, it's clay, but it could just be compacted too. Yeah, it's probably both. Okay, so what I have in here and what you have on your sheet is we have samples of sand, and they are labeled silt, clay, and these are actually true soil samples. I got these from the University of Wisconsin-Madison Soils Lab. Back there is, it says compost, but it's actually a mushroom compost. And then behind you is potting soil, just so you have kind of a different feel for it. A soil scientist or a horticulturist, when we're trying to look at different kinds of soil, we usually will start out with dry soil and start to feel it and feel for the particle sizes. So sand is, of course, you'd expect to be bigger. Think of the sizes that we talked about. Feel what the silt feels like. What's the, you know, what does it really, you know, feel against your skin? You can even smell it. You can look at it. Color varies, by the way, based on other minerals in the soil, so don't let the color necessarily throw you. Then after we feel with dry soil, then we do what's called, and I'm not as good as ribboning, what I normally do is I put some dry in my palm and then add water and then start feeling the wet. And when you feel it wet, it really feels differently. Sometimes it's tacky. Sometimes the texture feels a little bit different. So please, I hope you will get your hands dirty and you will feel the texture on some of these things. Things like the clay, because those tiny, tiny particles tend to clump together, if you pick up clay and you're feeling bigger pieces, keep rubbing it, because you'll feel them actually break down and break apart. So you'll think there's sand in here, but as you work through it, it breaks down because those clay particles are so tiny. But because they hold together so tightly, it gives you a different feel to begin with. We do have water back there if you'd like, and we also have paper towels. But I would really like you to spend, you know, the next 10 or 15 minutes, go around, check all of these out, and then we'll talk about, just like I do with the Master Gardeners, what's the different feel, what are you observing and feeling on these? And what do you learn from this, too?
That's a good one, Scalista.
You all didn't think I could get you dirty in the middle of winter, did you?
That's remedial. That's what you mean by how it looks. Bad.
Yeah, does it look different than it feels? Some people, the wax, and I'm not good enough at it, they actually do what's called riveting, and so they'll roll it into kind of a tube, and then depending on how that comes together, that's how they help. That's mushroom compost.
Yeah.
I didn't bring a horse manure. Too late.
This?
Yeah.
Look, chocolate pudding.
Thank you, Bob. She's hiding it.
What would be considered good soil?
A good soil is the combination of sand and the particles and the clay particles, but it would also have enough organic matter and other things to help those particles grow together.
I understand. I saw your
right. You have some compost or
you didn't think anybody read that, did you?
I can't even remember what I wrote about right now.
What was it again? It was a couple of weeks
ago.
And then you never answered my question.
What's your question?
Which was, is there one here in Kenosha?
No.
Where's the nearest one here?
No.
Is it Walworth?
The nearest one, I think, would probably be...
But that wasn't in the article.
Madison, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah. There's not one in southeast Wisconsin. They thought about doing one in Milwaukee that would be a more, like, kind of urban...
Yeah.
You know, an urban research station, but I don't think that's going to ever happen, so.
Not the funding. Right.
Yeah, so.
And is it just to help local farmers understand?
Well, a lot of them are kind of research-based, so they'll be testing out new varieties.
But eventually that research has to go somewhere.
Right, right.
Application.
Right, right. So, and it's kind of like, that's why it's kind of, whatever industry is kind of in that particular area, they're working with the farmers
so
in that area
example,
developing.
Up in Wisconsin Rapids, it's going to be based more towards cranberries.
They have cranberries, there's a cranberry specialist up there. They also, and then up around Plover, there's one that's kind of focused on potatoes. They have all the potato growers or, you know, have research plots there, developing new varieties for them. So they're all, in every part of the state, it's kind of like the focus of that, you know, in Door County, it's more about fruit.
Yeah, I thought it was more about tourism.
Yeah. Well, fruit is a part of the tourism industry.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Interesting. It's softer than the, I don't know if you tried that, but like, that looks a few more like pastry, you know, like a thick,
could pass as a cooking demonstration because it looks like ice cream or something chocolate.
What is potting?
So it's very different from home.
So it depends. Very dark. Potting soils are a little bit different, so that's what you normally do with the bag. But quite often it has either sphagnum or peat moss in it. And then this one has perlite. That's the root. Some have some nutrients, some do not. So some have vermiculite, which is the kind of shiny stuff. And that has a lot of sticks and stuff in it too. So.
Like I say, I don't pull in some good peat moss in the water from start.
It breaks down as another way.
Well, it's basically the opposite of where we're at.
So far, everything's wrong.
Everybody's so here.
gosh, I was looking for the loam. So that was the best one.
Because loam is the combination.
Oh, okay, so we could make our own.
We could, but we'd have to figure out the percentages and then put them together.
And then you'd have to kill you, so.
Yes, that's it. We're like, oh, the soil's too valuable.
Yes, now you know the secret. It's out.
We do have several loamy soils, especially southwestern Wisconsin. There are places that are pretty loamy soil because of the, what's called the loess.
We've also always been told about our soils here in Orange County.
That's because they have quite a bit of light.
It's nice to have light.
Oh, sorry, is that away?
It's handy for that sinking, it's all stuck, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot to tell you, media was potting soil. Teddy, I'm going to take this back in the other room. Okay.
Oh, the soil in southeastern Wisconsin is pretty good to grow.
The soil in southeastern Wisconsin is actually very good. Soil in most of Wisconsin is very good.
Well, you get out to Lake Nebraska, and that's not very nutritious.
No, it is. It's very nutritious, and they're deep soils because they're prairie soils.
Oh, okay.
So those, those prairie plant roots can go down, some of them 15 to 20 feet, and that's why the prairies have that wonderful, rich, high-nutrient soils. And we see a little bit of that here in southern Wisconsin. And so until you get really far west where you get more Wyoming and it starts to dry out and you get shorter grass prairies, but the tall grass prairies, very high nutrient levels, and that's where the big farms are,
in those areas. How do they grow anything in that rock?
In Arizona, in the rock, well, they have trouble, and they have soil pH problems too.
Well, California is basically a desert too.
Yeah,
I mean,
parts of it are. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
he's not supposed to eat it.
Yeah.
So we do have very good soils in Wisconsin, but in southeast Wisconsin. And one of the reasons is that we do have a nice mixture of particle sizes. And as we were talking earlier, the clay actually holds on to nutrients, so that's good.
Now the glaciers, they pulverize the rock? And
right. So the glaciers ground down the rock. So there are places in the northern part of the state where it's granite. So if you've ever been to Door County, that's a granite escarpment. But down in this area, our bedrock is limestone.
So. And go to the quarry in Racine and see. Mm-hmm. And it's not very, well, it came up there. But
yeah.
I thought Door County, right along the coast, was part of that Niagara.
It is. It's what's called the Niagara Escarpment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you have to wash off your face for the
mayor? I did.
So I had to do something a little different from those of you who have done the bugs before. We had to do something different, so I thought we'd do soil. So tell me.
Oh, that Doug's has done the bugs.
Huh?
Or did you do the
bugs? No. You've done the
I'm
bugs.
I'm the only one.
Yeah,
well,
I haven't done the bugs.
Oh, he hasn't done the bugs?
I'm the only one.
Wow.
Better years, better eating and dirt.
Next year we'll have to do the bugs. Okay, so tell me a little bit about what did you notice. So what did you notice about the sand? Anything?
It's gritty.
It's gritty. Okay, how else would you describe, anything else you describe the sand?
Like sugar.
Like sugar-like, okay.
Very frying.
Yeah, frying. How well do you think, and you already know this, how well do you think that holds on to water? Not well, and it dries out fairly quickly, so... okay, how about the silt? Because most of us know sand. How about the silt, which is that medium-sized particle? What did that feel like?
It's fine and powdery.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's often described that way, powdery,
soft.
Silky,
still
soft.
Still that were quite rigid. Really
well, and in that case, that's where they didn't get fully hydrated. So I started wetting this up this afternoon, but I didn't get it all.
No, I mean, they're dry.
Oh, yeah, they're dry. It's, and that's because I just didn't get it broken up.
Wet was, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that's that medium-sized particle, but do you notice that silky, but it really wasn't sticky?
Right.
How about the clay?
That was sticky.
Yeah. Right.
The silt was more slippery.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Gluey, okay, yeah, that's a great description. Did any of you find those little bigger pieces in the wet and kind of rub it and get it to break down at all?
A little bit.
Maybe a little bit, okay.
Dense is what I thought of the clay. Mm-hmm. The wet clay is very dense.
Yeah, and I had to put a lot of water in that to get that hydrated even to the point that it was, and it could have added more. You noticed it was actually starting to even dry out, and that's because those spaces between those particles of clay are so tiny that it just fills in all the water, fills in there, and the capillary, you know, action just holds it against all those little particles. Which is one reason why a soil that has a lot of those clay particles in it doesn't drain very well. It's just, and it, there's not much space for air. And because those particles are so small and so tight together, it's hard for roots to go through there. The good thing about clay and why most soils you want at least some of those clay particles in it is that clay has chemical properties that helps hold some of those nutrients in there. So it's actually called cation exchange capacity. So if you want to look up something when you're bored in the middle of the night. But it does help hold nutrients where the sandy soils don't hold nutrients at all. So most people think clay bad, not true. Some of that clay really is important to have as part of your soil. So how about the compost, which is all organic matter? How was it different than the mineral ones, which were the actual...
Very loose.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It felt like hay almost, like you're grabbing...
Okay.
Like everything was apart from each other. So
mm-hmm. Okay, all right.
Space, there's...
Right, because they're, in that case, they weren't fully decomposed, so you're still seeing bits of, in this case, plant matter, because it's mushroom compost. So you would see that, so that's it. But you can you imagine how if you're adding that to any of those soils, that organic matter helps to hold moisture if it's a sandy soil, but helps to break things apart. So think of putting those little clumps in between, those little tiny particles. So it really helps that out. Okay, how about potting soil? And that was a soilless potting soil.
You could feel like the fibers or the roots or whatever. It was like a stringy kind of.
Yeah. So that potting soil mix was a little bit of, it was peat moss. There was also just some partially broken down plant products. So there were some sticks and things in there.
You could tell there was peat moss in there because it was very, like, messy. Because peat moss is just so, like, messy because it's so lightweight and dirty.
Yeah. And then the white was perlite, which is actually rock that has been superheated and it causes it to explode, and that's how they get perlite. Vermiculite, I don't think there was any of that, but that's that kind of gold stuff that you sometimes see, and that also is a rock that's been superheated to explode. And those are used as an alternative to sand to help with drainage in the potting soil mixes, or in the media mixes. So, questions you have, from what you felt and saw and everything today? This. Yeah.
Do most gardeners tend to try and use like the media, like the actual commercial?
Right. So if they're doing, you know, pots and that kind of thing, most of them do go ahead and buy a bag because it's easier. You can mix your own. I usually recommend people use, again, soilless so that you don't put garden soil in, although you can put garden soil in and mix partly. You never want to do just garden soil in a pot or a container because, interestingly, it doesn't drain very well. So you have to have peat moss or perlite or extra sand or something because you don't have all of that, you know, feet of drainage area, and so it doesn't drain as well in a pot. So that's why they use that. That hope that answered your question. Are there questions about it? Okay. So that gives you a little idea, just kind of a feel, literally, for some of this that we have them do. The other thing then, what I wanted to touch on was soil testing. And I always tell people to soil test, and if you haven't soil tested for a while or never, I strongly suggest that you do that, and I actually brought soil test kits. You can go to different commercial labs, or you can use the University of Wisconsin soil testing lab, and that's what I brought the information from. But what soil testing does is that it gives you a idea of what your nutrient levels are. And if you notice on a fertilizer bag, the first one is nitrogen, which makes green leaf growth. The second one is phosphorus, which it helps with flowering and also somewhat with root growth. And the third one is potassium or K, and that helps with disease prevention and also some roots and some other things. We don't actually test nitrogen in soils because it's chemically, it changes very quickly in the soil, but we do check for phosphorus and potassium. Our soils in southern Wisconsin are rarely deficient in phosphorus and potassium unless it's been, you know, gardened for a long time and nobody's put any fertilizer on it. Even a lot of our lawns, we don't need to add it. So in many cases, gardeners are adding nutrients and adding to the cost and other things when they don't need to. So one of the reasons for a soil test is to see. It can save you money if you don't need to add it. It will also tell you the amount of organic matter you have in the soil, and it will tell you what the soil pH is on it. And you can also sometimes have some specialty things, so you can ask if you want to know, is there iron in it? When we're doing some of the community gardens, we'll ask for lead testing because of problems with that. We don't want people being exposed to lead, so we can get some other kinds of things. The other thing it'll give you is with the soil pH is the lime requirement. Our soils in southern Wisconsin generally tend to be neutral, so in the sevens or upper sixes, seven is neutral, right in the middle of the pH scale. And so we don't normally need to add lime, which raises the soil pH. If anything, we need to add sulfur to our soils. So you never want to add anything routinely unless you have a soil test result that tells that. So when you're doing a soil test, whether it's your garden or your lawn or wherever, You want to dig down about where you'd expect the roots to be. So if you're testing for vegetables, probably about 6 or 8 inches deep. If you're testing for a lawn, probably about 3 or 4 inches deep. A tree, you know, that's 6 to 8 inches deep or so. And you want to go all around in the area, usually get about 10 samples, and you just cut down with a trowel, and you want to throw out any debris, any roots, any worms, any of that stuff, so you just get the soil. And then you mix them up in a clean bucket, so you get a composite sample, and you send that sample into the soil testing lab. And again, I prefer a commercial lab than to the home kits because they're not really as accurate. For annual gardens, flower gardens, a new lawn, fall, in this spring, as soon as the soil defrosts, so we get that out of the soil. Perennial flowers, any perennial, like things like asparagus, that kind of stuff. Lawns, established lawns, you can do basically anytime the ground isn't frozen. And if you have different places in your yard that look physically different, then you may want to do two separate different soil tests because it may be different. Or if you have a vegetable garden that you've been putting lots of stuff in for years, that's probably going to be different than your front lawn that you've been treating a little bit differently. So that may be two different soil tests too. So university soil test is about $15 for a basic soil test, so it's well worth the money because in the long run you save money on it. Sounds like I'm, yeah, anyway. And we really recommend that you soil test. This is about every 2 to 3 years. For most people, if you get it every 3 to 5 years, that's great. So anyway, but if you'd like a soil test kit, I have that here, and it has all the information on it. And there is, a lot of people think they have to have the official little soil testing bag, but you don't. You can use a Ziploc bag too. So any questions about soils? And that's like big soils course all crammed into 20 minutes. All right. Then the other things I would like to share with you is just an update of some of my programming. One is that we now have the information out on our Spring Into Gardening, which is our day-long gardening seminar for the public or home gardeners, and it is March 14th. We're already getting lots of registrations in. So if you know gardeners or you're a gardener or know someone you think might be interested, please take that and share that with them. The other thing I have is that February is when we do landscaping and grounds maintenance short course, and that is every Wednesday morning with two professional speakers and or extension speakers, and the audience is landscapers, grounds maintenance professionals, arborists, those kinds of things. They do get professional CEUs with it, along with their continuing education. Really excited this year. We had 138 this morning here. So this is the biggest since I've been here 11 years. I don't know that even 11 years ago it was that big. I take it as a sign. First of all, we have a great class, but the other is I'm taking it as the economy is turning around, because now what we're seeing now is, where we saw companies that would only send one or two people, now they're sending 5 or 6 people. So this is all really good news for us, and it's a great class. So questions about horticulture programming? Okay, thank you.
Okay. Chairman, the next item is the resolution. So that was sent to you in your packets. I'm delighted to say that we were successful, Carmelo and I, writing a grant to the John J. and Ruth F. Kloss Charitable Trust for our STEM after school program that we're doing with Trevor Wilmot. And I'm going to say this is actually as a result of some nudging we got from Supervisor Decker when she saw the Tech Wizards program being displayed here last spring, if you remember. And she asked about that availability in the western part of the county, and I said, unfortunately, our funding doesn't reach the western part of the county, but we could look for other funding. And we happened to have been in a meeting with Brian Albrecht from Gateway Technical College, and we were explaining to him what we're doing. And again, he said, well, what do you need? And we're like, well, we can always use more money because then we could expand the program. And he said, I might be able to help you out with that. So he is, I think, the person who has, this particular charitable trust is by invitation only. And I think he planted the seed so that we would get invited to apply for the funding. We took it with the idea of going into the western part of the county, and we got funded for $10,000. So we're pretty excited about that. That's a great opportunity for us. So what you have before you is the resolution to accept the funding for us to be able to cash the check.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Okay. Motion by Supervisor Goble, second by Supervisor Decker. Right? What exactly are you going to do with the $10,000 now? I know it's going to be in Trevor Wilmot grade school.
I'll let Carmela talk about what we're going to do.
So we submitted a grant with a specific set of items. You know, we need to buy some gear to teach the class. We're using the Lego We Do set. This is a robotic set for elementary school age kids. You know, it's basically, they put together several, you know, robots with these Lego pieces, and they come in bright colors, very easy to use for kids. And they come with a software, and the software allows the kids to program these robots to do some motions. It's very basic. It's like the one that we show here, but more basic. And the idea is to teach kids the integration between hardware and software. So we can explain, you know, this correlation between building a robot and making it work. But also what we're doing is building a curriculum that builds life skill learning as part of the activity. So we're not only teaching 21st century, you know, technical skills, but also teaching essential life skills. And so we have a partition of the budget is to buy the equipment, you know, and the school agreed to use, to provide the computers. So we only, all we had to do is to get the WeDos, which are, I mean, it's an investment, you know, they're not cheap. And also the software license, so we can install the software in the computers. And then we have a small amount for a stipend for either a college student or maybe a teacher that might be willing to do extra hours, and that's gonna be, it's not gonna be a full-fledged salary, but at least it's some, you know, some allowance for anyone who wants to volunteer. And the idea is to build capacity, so a year and a half from now, we have helped the school build a STEM curriculum, and hopefully we either get more funding of the school or engage the school in keeping the program alive.
We also built into the grant an opportunity to visit Gateway, to take a field trip, and to host a robotics rally so that the kids will be able to, hopefully we'll be able to do some competitions with perhaps another school or bring them with the kids we're using, we're Kenosha Unified, and do the robot rally here maybe. So that's what the funding will be used for.
Any other questions? Seeing none, youth and governance.
Oh, you have to vote on the motion?
Yep, right. Youth and governance, if you're in favor, say aye.
Aye.
And the members of the committee, if you're in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, say no.
I completely forgot we have our youth and governance vote first. There's a little bit. Signatures. My apologies. Yeah, educator updates. We'll just go ahead and keep going while you're assigning.
I'm going to pass over a couple of things here. I wanted to share a project that I'm working on.
Oh, you do. That's weird, Amy, because it was up for the other.
Got a beautiful, is that one of your...
Yeah, but I don't know why it's not showing.
Well, I can tell you about it.
Yeah, just tell. I'm sorry.
And I can send you the link. But so I've been working with the Kenosha Main Street Program, Downtown Kenosha Inc., and the Kenosha History Center on a sort of tourism and community revitalization project, a local historical walking tour. So. You're looking here, Supervisor Noble, on Green Bay's historic walking tour. and that's the brochure that we're basically going to be mimicking. The things that you have here in the black, that was a previous project that UW Extension was involved with in the late 80s, and features a lot of historic homes and buildings and sites. And we're basically going to bring this up into the 21st century here with an online application and also the brochure that we're going to be making from scratch to model that from Green Bay. So I'll share the link with you because it's under development now, but we're basically going to start with the Pike Creek settlements, and we've got some photos, early photos of Kenosha. Advancing the page, you can see we're going to start the tour in Civic Center Historical District, which is one of three National Registered Historical Districts here in Kenosha. Talk a little bit about City Beautiful, the movement, and basically laying a city out on a grid and making the buildings very prominent and kind of giving city historical districts a real character. And then proceed through talking about the Dinosaur Discovery Museum and how it was moved to its current location on Wenches. So very unique history there with that building and all the different uses. The courthouse, there's a very notorious court case. The only Wisconsin man put to death was from Kenosha. Murder mystery sort of story, and after that the death penalty was outlawed in the state of Wisconsin. So I've got the case there. We talk about the post office just briefly, and then we move into kind of the Elks Club, the Heritage House, move in through sort of the what is there now and what is kind of the rendition of the project as it comes to fruition downtown. Library Park, there's a lot of significance here, a lot about Simmons Library, and just kind of carries on. So I won't go through all the photos, but then we carry on through 6th Avenue, cross over into the Streetcar District, walk over onto Simmons Island and the Keeper's Home, and end at the History Center. So it's just a project we're working on to, like I say, promote tourism and really build capacity among Kenoshans of the historical nature of their downtown. We are a Main Street community, which means historic preservation is really at the heart of community revitalization, and I don't think enough people really celebrate what our heritage is. So really neat project that we're working on. Last thing, I just wanted to mention that I'm pursuing a certification in economic development. I had put in my monthly report that I attended a real estate development and reuse course, one of 6 required courses that I'm doing to basically get a certification through the International Economic Development Council. So very rigorous program. I've taken an exam, a written and oral exam, and it's about a 50% pass rate. So I'm gearing up for that. It'll be in June, and
she, I tell you that she will be, if she, and she will pass, when she passes, she will become the only county-based educator certified economic development for this certification. She'll be the only one in the state.
Wow.
So
wow. That's great.
It's really exciting.
Good
so
for you.
Thank you.
Study hard, right?
Yeah. That's the plan.
Yes.
Okay, I'll go next. So last week I did my first pesticide applicator training session here at the county center. We had 32 attendees from Commission Racine. Most of those were farmers, but also some nursery and greenhouse managers that apply restricted use pesticides, which are products that aren't available for general sale, and if you want to apply them, you need to get certified through the state, and you need to re-up that certification every 5 years. So it's a program, they have to do a training, and then there's a test, and Extension is the dedicated training and testing body. So with those individuals, we did a training and then testing, and then I'm also following up with anyone who wasn't able to attend to make sure they're certified. So they can go out and buy the products they need to apply on their farms. So we also did a workshop this weekend focused on QuickBooks for beginners for farm financial management. That was held in Elkhorn We had 16 people show up. It's kind of a one-on-one training, so it's a computer program. Obviously, things can go wrong, so you kind of need a smaller group of people, and that went really well. Put that on with my counterpart in Walworth County. I've got a few events coming up next week. One is a farmers market vendor workshop that will focus on food safety regulations and also pest and disease management strategies for some of the current issues that mostly producers, vegetable producers are facing. And then also next Saturday, we'll have a horse education day here at the county center on Saturday. So we've got about 60 people already signed up for that. And then in March, we'll be doing the first in a series of farm succession planning sessions. And this first one will focus on tax considerations and also Medicaid recovery, things that farm families in particular need to be aware of. And we'll also be hosting an event in Burlington to bring farmers and market managers together to connect and learn about food safety regulations, selling to restaurants, and different ways to market their products in this region. And that's all I've got. So.
I'll go next. I'm here to report for the nutrition education program. So we wrapped up the last quarter of fiscal year, we wrapped up the first quarter of fiscal year 2015. And I'm very happy to say that we're right on track for having completed 25% of our education. So if we keep on this pace, then we'll be fulfilling all of our agreements that we have made with community partners and are budgeted for. We served over 1,000 learners, 1,060 to be precise, of all ages, and the community partners that we worked with included Columbus House, the Community Action Agency WIC Clinic, Kenosha Unified Head Start, Wistosha Head Start and Wistosha Parents, Women and Children's Horizons, EBSOLA, Shalom Shelter and Food Pantry, the Parent Talk Lunches with Prevention Services Network, Parents and Children Classroom Education, which is a program at Indian Trails High School, Res Care at Kenosha County Job Center, and Grant Elementary. So those were our partners for this quarter. And then some of those we will hold on to as we move through the year, because some of those partners have audiences that are new frequently. So we go more than one time or more than one series. Whereas the schools, we usually do a series of five classes in each school, and then we're done with the schools. So we will hang on to all the partners that have that ever-changing audience. And then in addition to that, this quarter, we will be working within KUSD, we'll be working with Brass, Wilson, McKinley, Frank, and Jefferson elementary schools. So we will also be adding some education for seniors this quarter through KFASI, or Kenosha Area Family and Aging Services, Inc.'s Senior Center Without Walls is a program that they have, and they do a phone conference call with seniors who might not have an opportunity to get out into the community. And so we're gonna be hosting a couple of sessions with them, which I listened in on a few, and it was a real hoot, so I'm looking forward to chatting with them. Some new projects that we are looking at right now and working on actively already include parent outreach with what we call indirect education. So that would be our FoodSense newsletter that's produced by the state program. It gives nutrition, food safety, and food resource management tips to parents. It also has recipes that incorporate the ideas that they're talking about and more information about our program if anybody needs more information. We are working with an AmeriCorps member that we got through through Gateway, Jeff Gaffey, and I hope that we can bring him. Carmelo and I are actually sharing his work, so we're making good use of his time and having him work on parent outreach. through going in and working with teachers and administrators. The overwhelming thing I heard from our educators, we had the six educators in the nutrition program when I started, was that we're not going to reach the parents unless we reach the administrators and the teachers. You know, we can go there, we can set up a table, and we can be there, but parents that are in and out, you know, they're on a mission to get their child and get up. But if the teacher is engaging parents and talking about the nutrition program, then the parents are way more likely to stop. Okay, what do I need to learn here? Because my child's teacher is saying, you know, that we need to pay attention. So we really need to, you know, kids don't buy groceries. So we really need to also get the messages to parents that we're talking about in order to have that work on multiple levels. And so that's one project that we're hitting pretty heavily. And then we're also reaching out to provide after-school program education in the schools. And we have already spoken with Brass, Vernon, Frank, and Wilson in order to provide that. And we're currently doing the program with Grant and Jefferson, but that's through the Boys and Girls Club. So these are all sort of separate agreements and conversations. And I just wanted to share real briefly, we had some great comments from the participants who received our education at the Shalom Food Pantry. And I just wanted to share some of those with you because I think they were great. I like that you are using products we get from here and showing us what to do with them. So our educator works with the pantry, gets the products that they have for participants, prepares a healthy meal so that it's actually something that the participants are receiving, that they can use. I always take the recipes from here and make it, and people like it. It's good to try something new every time. And my favorite, forget McDonald's, I'm making this. And that was in reference to a pasta dish that one of our educators made with whole grain pasta.
So I'll be brief, we're running out of time. I just wanted to mention last Saturday we have the 4-H Project Day here in this building, and this is a yearly event that we have. We basically bring volunteers to recreate how 4-H projects, activities related to a 4-H project, so kids who are not in these projects but are in 4-H get a taste of what it's like to be in the project for one day. And we have everything from making baskets to making cakes and decorating cakes to robotics, and it was an excellent event. We had 60 youth attending, and plus the parents. You know, we got a lot of support from our volunteers and also from some of the parents that showed up. So the event was a success.
I'll wrap up. I shared with you late this afternoon the statistics for youth and governance, and I just want to say, wow, 254 nominations. We've never had that many nominations. That's pretty impressive. I don't know what happened at Indian Trail this year, but they're off the charts. 94 nominations, the highest of any school ever. I don't know, maybe that's every, how many 10th graders would there be? Is that almost like every 10th grader? It's like, wow, that's incredibly impressive. So every youth got the letter, congratulations, you've been nominated. And we send the nomination letter to all youth who are eligible to apply a second year. And I look over there at the table because we have one young person who is eligible to reapply.
That'd be you.
So they get the chance to reapply. But they get thrown in the mix with everyone. So the applications are due March 6th, so we'll see. Of the 254, how many actually take the step and apply? And then you'll be
in. Do you remember?
It was low.
It was 42 low.
42 or something.
Yeah, it was. It was very low. It was very low. But we had lower nominations last year, too.
So. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. So it was a presentation.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm thinking. Absolutely. So for those of you who don't know, given the opportunity. Yeah, absolutely. So Supervisor Retzloff was given an opportunity to speak to the Kenosha Unified School Board about youth and governance. And so I think that extra sort of, here's what can the schools do to support the program? The county board's offering this wonderful program. Maybe it had some great influence.
It went well. And they're going to make a commitment from people on the board that they're going to have. It's going to be with me to keep on top of this, so it's going to be successful. So it's important. They're actually going to do something on their own. They're using, their isn't as strong as ours, but and they're going to improve on that. And it's, they're all in, so it's, it, it is, so it's going well.
That would be, yeah. That would be great. A good model thing to follow. Great. And the last thing I want to do is distribute an invitation that I also sent to you via email some time ago, but it's an invitation to our SNAP Challenge, which will be February 24th at the Mondragano Center at Gateway Technical College for our community food security event. And we have some members of the community who have agreed to take the SNAP Challenge, which means they've agreed to plan, prepare, and serve meals to their family for 3 days as if they were receiving food stamps. And the maximum, excuse me, the average amount of food stamps per day is $3.89 a day. So they planned, prepared, and served food with that budget. It's not a lot of money. Yeah, so it'll be really interesting to see how that goes. I should mention, UW System has been in the news a little bit these last few weeks. So if you were wondering what that proposed budget would have it as an effect on us as a cooperative extension office, I have to tell you right now, I don't know. I don't know the effects because the UW System has not yet allocated what percentage of the cut will be shared by each institution. We know we're going to receive a cut, and we absolutely know at some point we will be affected. We just don't know how and what and to what extent. So that's all yet to be determined. But it's interesting times.
Okay, is that it? Motion to recess and reconvene in the other room.
So, second.
Motion by Supervisor, second. Recess. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
There are soil test kits here on the corner.